Do you rise with the roosters or hoot with the owls? Either way, it's your brain that determines what time of day you're at your best. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht, and I'll be right back with new research on how the clock affects brain function next.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust.
Are you a morning person or a night owl? Researchers say our brains determine the answer. They scanned volunteers for muscle strength and the excitability of pathways through their nervous systems. They found the brains of early risers worked best at 9 a.m., while the night owls peaked at 9 p.m. Late sleepers also grew stronger throughout the day, while morning folks stayed steady. So, early birds, go easy on those night owls. Sleeping in is more a function of biology than willpower. And once they clear the sleep from their eyes, night owls grow stronger with each passing moment, so they're on a continual upswing. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht for StartMail.com, reminding you to protect your privacy.
This is the Dr. Katherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them. As they march into the palaces of the high and mighty, I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. And they will rejoice when I am exalted.
Katherine Albrecht here with good news. You didn't even know that I needed this good news, but I got good news today. And because I got good news, I can tell you what I've been worried about in the last week or so. And then I'm going to tie this in. I'm going to tie it in like I always do to something completely seemingly unrelated. I'm going to tie in my own personal health concerns with quantum mechanics. You ready for this? All right. So a week ago, well, let me back up. You may have noticed I'm not on YouTube these days. Well, there's a reason for that. A lot of things are shifting and changing in my life, and I have to say the months of October and November were really, really challenging in a lot of ways. You might have picked it up, might have heard it in my voice. I pride myself on my ability to probably be like, that guy in the Monty Python skit who's, tis just a flesh wound, right? His arm is blown off and he's limping along. Okay, well, that's kind of me on the radio. I am not very good at this in real life, but I'm really good at it on the radio, that when things are going really badly in my personal life, the radio is the one place where I can kind of seem like I have my act together. The months of October, November were really, really hard for me, and for a whole lot of reasons, a lot of personal and family and relationship and just stuff going on in October and November, and it took a real toll on me. The older you get, the more stress and difficult situations can actually take a toll on your health. And I'm just now getting to the point where I'm the age where that's actually happening to me. I've heard about it, and I always thought, pshaw, I can pull an all-nighter. I can keep going. I'm the Energizer Bunny. And in October, November, I started to feel like, yeah, maybe I'm not. maybe I'm not. Maybe I should pay a little more attention to my health. So I don't know if you saw this in my last couple of YouTube videos, but I gained a ton of weight. And I started just not feeling my usual self, feeling not very good. Now, for people who don't know my history, back in 2011, I was diagnosed with stage 3C breast cancer. And in fact, it was a really nasty case. I had a 5-centimeter, that's like the size of a plum. I had a 5-centimeter tumor in my left breast. And stupid me, I was still kind of breastfeeding. It had only been a couple years since I'd stopped. And I was used to having kind of lumps here and there because when you breastfeed, that's where the milk comes out of, right? Lumps. So I just kind of ignored it, didn't think much about it. It modified, I'm going to tell this for the women out there to listen up, because it would change with my menstrual cycle, with my monthly cycle. As my hormones changed, this weird lumpiness would change as well. And so I just chalked up the lumpiness to, oh, well, that's just the way things are. So in 2011, all through Christmas, I was diagnosed like the first week in January, I think. I was actually on the air when I had started vomiting uncontrollably and had to be rushed to the emergency room where they did a brain scan. Oh, no, that was 2015. I'm sorry. 2011. Yeah, no, both times it was Christmas time and both times it was dramatic. So 2011, I was first diagnosed with a huge lump in my left breast. And 2015, I was diagnosed with two huge lumps in my brain that had were metastatic of the thing that had started in my breast. But going back to 2011, all through Christmas, I would feel this kind of stabbing feeling, like somebody had a pencil that was very sharp and was just poking me. And it felt like it was coming down from my underarm, kind of poking into the outer edge of my breast. But just this like periodic poke. Ow, 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 ow. All right. So that was going on. And I eventually went to see my doctor and she went, oh my gosh, there's a huge tumor in here. And then that began a whole saga, which I did broadcast the show all the way through it. I wish I still had access to those old shows. You could go back and listen to them and I could listen to them and go, yeah, what was that like? But that was 2011. Okay, now fast forward, 2015, I had the brain surgery, and then I went on the incredible, miraculous tetrathiomolybdate copper chelation treatment through Cornell Breast Center, which was a clinical trial that was FDA approved through Cornell Breast Center with Dr. Linda Vidot. And this is the thing that got me a strike on YouTube, because I said, it is a miracle and it cures cancer. And they have found a cure for cancer and it is copper chelation, at least for the progression of already existing cancers that have been able to be removed through surgery and chemotherapy. So I will be the last person in the world. You will never hear me say, don't do surgery, don't do chemotherapy. You will hear me say, do them both, please. I beg you on bended knee, do them both. If you have a tumor, don't be Steve Jobs and go, I'm just going to go the natural route and then die. Don't be, some colleagues of mine who got tumors, got breast cancer at the same time as me and are no longer here and I'm still here. So I'm a huge believer in do the chemotherapy, do the radiation, have the surgery, get that darn thing out of your body as soon as you possibly can, and then nuke the area around it as much as you can. You want to kill this thing dead. It is not something you play around with, and you don't want to treat your body really nice and go, I've been so awful to my body. Now I'm going to eat all the right foods. And because the cancer cells are going, yeah, that's what I like. I don't like you eating junk food. I like you eating the healthy stuff, because then I can use all of those antioxidants and all of those tasty nutrients that you're putting in there to protect myself. And those cells will do the same thing that you should be doing with your body when you don't have cancer, which is taking good care of yourself. But the cells that have cancer will go, yeah, oh, thank you very much. Just hand another serving of healthy supplements and nutrients my way, because I really like those things. So you kill cancer not with kindness. You kill cancer by killing it dead, by beating the living daylights out of it. But anyway, so I went through all of that. Lots of chemotherapy, lots of surgery, radiation. I did the whole nine yards. And then when it came back in my brain a couple of years later, which cancer is want, W-O-N-T, meaning has a tendency to do. Cancer is want to come back in that way. When it came back in my brain, we nuked that. And anyway, long story short, the tetrathiomolidate copper chelation helped me survive both of those, and I've been doing great. Well, now let me fast forward. So October, November, terrible. I gained a ton of weight. I'm feeling awful. I'm kind of struggling. I'm having a hard time physically. I'm having a hard time emotionally. I'm just having a hard time, not spiritually, because I'm on my knees before God, and He is very faithful, but I'm not feeling very good. And then about probably 10, 15 days ago, I'm lying in bed. And what do I feel? Poke in my remaining breast. So I had a full mastectomy. My left breast was removed. It was reconstructed, all kind of stuff, surgery. And they were like, well, do you want to be like, you know, Angelina Jolie hadn't yet done it, but basically, do you want to take them both off just in case? And I was like, no, I think I'll hang on to this one. And so far, so good. I have mammograms in my remaining right breast, which have been healthy and fine. But here I am. I'm lying in bed. I'm thinking, life is really hard. Help me, God. And all of a sudden, I feel the very same exact feeling of poke. Like the same sharpened pencil poke, except this time it's in my right breast. It's on the inner portion of my right breast. Now, this poke lasted a second, maybe a split second. It was short and very, very short. It didn't come back. It didn't happen more than once. It happened literally just one single time. And I went, oh my gosh. All right. Now, last week, I had an appointment with my oncologist. I see her periodically. I got regular scans of my brain, MRIs. I got regular scans of my lungs and liver and my bones, because that's where breast cancer wants to go. And they just want to make sure it hasn't come back. So since 2015, that's 10 years now, it has not come back. Okay. So I have my routine. I see her like every 4 months. I mean, routine, I go in and I see her and she says, how you doing? I'm like, I don't know, I gained a lot of weight and I'm struggling. And for the first time in my life, I have high blood pressure. Now, I have really low blood pressure. My blood pressure, I'm lucky if I can get it up to 110 over like 60. All my life I've had it. It runs in my family. My grandfather had it, my mom had it, my sister has it. We all have low blood pressure. So my blood pressure has never been an issue. And for the first time, it's like 135 over 80, something insane. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? So this was before I actually saw my oncologist. So I have this high blood pressure, gained weight. I'm like, what is going on here? I don't get it. So anyway, when I saw her, I said, you know, and she took my blood pressure, was fine. It was like 120 over 70. And I said, but it had been high. And then I had this little poking, stabbing pain. Anyway, long story short, she sent me in for testing today to figure out what the heck it was and maybe a biopsy. All right, I'll tell you more when I come back. Stay on the edge of your seat.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business, but if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
I saw the Lord high and lifted up, and the train of His robe filled the temple. I heard the voice calling from the throne. When He spoke, the earth began to tremble. Yeah.
Amen. Catherine Albrecht here. I'm back. All right. So so here I am last week seeing my oncologist, who I've seen many times since I moved to Michigan in the COVID year of 2020. So I've seen her many, many times. I see her a lot. She knows me pretty well. She knows a lot about me. She knows a lot about my life. And she's a friend. She's a wonderful person. And I tell her, as she's doing her usual exam, and usually these are pretty low-key. She tells me, yeah, you got the results of your last MRI, nothing there. Your brain looks great. Results of your last test, your last scan, everything's good. And let me just, take your, sit on this table and, put on this little gown, and I'm just going to check everything out. And she checks my lymph nodes, and she kind of palpates my neck, and then she does a breast exam, and et cetera, et cetera. And there's never anything there. But this time, all right, now this is last week, and I'm leading up to something related to quantum physics. So bear with me. I'm going to make a connection here, and it's a really big one, and you're going to, it's going to blow your mind, I think, and maybe change your life. So she does the, I tell her about this stabbing thing. She does the breast exam, which she's done a jillion times. And in the place where the poke was, she says, where did you feel that? And I said, here. And she checks it, and then she checks it some more, and she's continuing to check it, and she's checking it more. And I'm like, is everything okay? And she says, well, actually, something doesn't feel right here. And I'm like, oh, gosh. Oh, man, 10 years I've been cancer-free. What the heck? This again, right? And the whole experience flashes before my eyes of all of the horrors that are involved when you are diagnosed with cancer. And she says, it's not a lump exactly, but the tissue doesn't, it feels like kind of, how did she put it? She said, kind of. Fibrous, like it's just not flexible like it should be. Like there's something just sort of, And I had this picture of, like chewing gum that's gotten a little unsticky, like it's pulling apart, but not quite the right way. And so she says, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you in for a sonogram. And I said, not a mammogram. She said, no, a sonogram is better because a mammogram is more, I didn't even know this, right? I'll teach you. She said, a mammogram is more generic, but a sonogram really focuses in. It gives us a much clearer view. And I'm like, oh, okay. She says, and I'm going to send it in stat. Now, if you've ever heard the word stat, you probably heard it in TV shows and doctors, stat, do that stat. Stat means ASAP, like right this minute, like do not wait, do not pass, go, just go do it. Right. Normally, when she calls in or she types in that I need to have a brain MRI, they'll call me sometime within the week and they'll schedule it within the month and I'll just go in and have it done. This one was stat. Right. So she says two things. I want you to go in and I want you to get a blood draw right now. And we're going to check your tumor markers. Now, these are a bunch of letters and numbers. I have no idea what this stuff even measures because I've never really had to look at it. But she sends me in for a blood test. On the way out, as I'm leaving, I got to swing by the lab and roll up my sleeve, and they take my blood, and they're looking for the tumor markers. And then she says, I'm going to send you for the sonogram so we can see what's going on with your breast. But I'm also going to send you for, you are due for your CT scan. I have these twice a year, and they put you in the CT machine and they scan, well, not you, they put me in there and they scan my lungs and my liver because that's where breast cancer wants to go. So every kind of cancer that you get in an initial, it has its sort of initial site. So it could be the prostate, it could be the lungs, the skin, it could be the pancreas. In my case, it was the breast. That's where it starts, but it wants to spread. And every particular cancer wants to spread to a different place. They all have their preferred places. And so breast cancer goes to the brain, which it did in my case. It also goes to the lungs, to the liver, and to the bones. That's why you'll sometimes see breast cancer survivors and they're on crutches or they're in wheelchairs. It's because their bones have been attacked by the breast cancer. So it's no longer, it's not bone cancer. It's breast cancer of the bones or in the bones. In my case, it wasn't a brain tumor. It was a breast cancer tumor in my brain that I had to have surgery for in 2015. All right, so she says, you're due for this. I'm going to send you in for your lung and liver CT scan and make sure that that's all clean, and then I'm going to send you in for the sonogram. Okay. Well, this is last week. I did my show, got through the week, and in the back of my mind, I've been, it would be really good to not have that cancer come back. All right, well, I'll jump to the chase. Today, I had a completely clean scan. I spent the morning, I was there from, I think I left the house at 9, and I got back right before the show. So this is what I've been doing all day. I have been in the cancer center. having blood tests done, right? So I have the sonogram, I have a blood test, I have the CT scan, I do go through all of that. And at the sonogram, now my doctor had said, they'll tell you at the sonogram, they'll tell you right there if you need to go in for a biopsy. Now, here's what a biopsy is. They find something unusual, they take a long needle, and they suck out some cells, and they send them to the lab, and they look at them under a microscope, and they determine whether they are normal or whether they are cancerous. Okay, that's a biopsy. And by the way, I don't know about other people, it is the most painful thing I can ever even describe. I mean, it's like screaming levels of pain. For me, it was. Now, hopefully it won't be for you. Hopefully they'll numb you. I don't know. But when I had my original biopsy, I would have bent metal at the time. It was that bad. So she says, you know, you're going to have your sonogram. They're going to look at it. And then if need be, they'll do a biopsy and figure out what's going on. So I go in today, a little nervous, right? A little stressed. And I'm praying like crazy. Now, here's the part I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you today about quantum mechanics and prayer, because it is the mysteries of the universe that have been unlocked by understanding. The smallest particles that make up matter and make up our universe are absolutely directly pointed to the power of prayer and the presence of God in our lives, right? Now, let me tell you how. So anyway, she does the sonogram. I wind up praying with the lady who did my sonogram and talking about quantum mechanics. Seriously, I'm having this whole conversation with her. It was really interesting. Everybody I met today, I just wound up having these conversations about God with. And she finishes and she says, you know, I don't see anything. I'm like, well, hooray. So she takes it back to whatever doctor analyzes these sonograms. And he also has the results of my CT scan. And she comes back. She says, doctor, you know, so-and-so, he looked at him and there's nothing there. You're fine. And I was like, yes, praise God. All right. So that's my good news. I'm here. I'm going to be here for a while, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. I'll still be here. The really good news is I get to spend my energy, which is limited because we all have limited time and energy in a day. I get to spend it doing things that matter. Not that staying alive doesn't matter, but it sucks up a lot of your time and a lot of your energy and a lot of your strength to be fighting a deadly disease because it just consumes your life. So I'm like, oh no, I got this book to write. I got my show to do. I want to get back on YouTube and I want to be podcast. Right. So that's the great news. Now, let me tell you the cool quantum part. Now, are you ready for this? All right, so there's my personal news. It's really great. Thank you, those of you who kind of knew that I was going. I didn't really tell anybody the full details, or not too many people, but if you knew I was going in for some testing, here's the high five. I'm fine. I'm great. Thank you for your prayers. Prayer changes things. Prayer changes things. Lori, who writes up the descriptions on my show, back in 2012, like years ago, sent me a little plaque. It's currently in my bathroom where I see it every day. And it says, prayer changes things. And on the back of it, it's got this wonderful, Lori was a listener to my show. We'd never met in person yet. We since have, and she's now working on the show and listens every day. Hello, Lori, out there. I love you. So she sent this to me back in the day, because I used to have my address up and people would send, you know, money to support the show, and they would, all through cancer, people sent me cards. I mean, just wonderful things that people sent to me. So a lot of love pouring out. And this particular gift from Lori was a plaque that said, prayer changes things. And on the back, it's got her, you know, just a blessing, and then her name, Lori, and her last name, and then 2012. All right. So I've looked at that 1,000 times. Sometimes I turn it over back before Lori and I reconnected earlier this year, and I would turn it over and just wonder how she was and say a prayer for her. And I would think, prayer changes things. All right. I want you to have a plaque like that. I want you to just print it out from your printer if you need to. Stick it on your wall. I want you to see this every day too, because it's true. And the fact that prayer changes things, you don't need a little wooden plaque that's nicely painted. You can do that. But you can just handwrite it on a piece of lined notebook paper with 3 holes in it. Stick that on your wall with a piece of masking tape. Doesn't matter. You need to have it in front of you. You need to remember, prayer changes things. Now, the Bible actually tells us the earnest prayers of a righteous man availeth much, something along those lines. Man, woman, same thing. A righteous person. Now, how righteous do you have to be for your prayers to count? God listens to prayer. God listens to prayer. Now, if you have a relationship with him, then it's far easier to break through the noise and pray. But God listens to prayer. And if you are a righteous man or a righteous woman, that doesn't mean that you lived your life with no sin. That doesn't mean that you don't have shortcomings. That doesn't mean any of that. It just means that your arrows, I used to talk about this on the show before, when you aim, when you pull back the bow and you put an arrow on the string and you aim it, where are you aiming? Are you aiming at things that hurt people? Are you aiming at selfishness? Are you aiming at crime? Or are you aiming towards the good? Are you aiming to help? Are you aiming to be good, to be a good person, to be a loyal person, to be an honorable person, an honest person, a person who puts others above yourself, a person who loves the Lord, right? When you put your arrow on the string and you aim, that determines whether you're a good person or not. If you have a relationship with the Lord Jesus, that determines whether you are saved or not. So they're kind of different. You can be a good person and not walk in with the Lord, and you're still not forgiven for all the other things that you've done wrong, right? That's a whole other conversation. We can talk about the gospel in another show. But I want to talk about where you're aiming your arrows. Are you aiming at goodness? Okay, now, we don't have very good aim as human beings. I can aim for goodness all the time, and the wind blows my arrows off course, and they don't hit where I want them to hit. So it doesn't mean that you do necessarily good things all the time, or that everything you do turns out to be good. It just means your heart wants it. You're aiming there. All right, stay tuned. I'm going to tell you about quantum things next.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com.
Red alert, Yahoo users. You've fallen in a trap that could ruin your life if you keep using Yahoo.
You consent to sharing all data in your email account with our AI providers, and you grant us a perpetual license to use, display, publish, and publicly distribute your content in any media known now or in the future, and to let other users access and distribute it as well.
Yikes! It's time to switch to StartMail, the only email that's AI-free and private by design. StartMail.com. Use promo code JD.
Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
To that. All right. I'm going to talk about quantum weirdness. All right. Quantum weirdness. We've heard the word quantum gets thrown around a lot in really stupid ways. Like, I remember when I was first diagnosed with cancer, people would send me the quantum water. And quantum is almost like a marketing term that people throw onto snake oil, things that are completely ridiculous and made up to make them sound more cool. But quantum actually does have a meaning, and it's not a marketing meaning. It has to do with the actions of particles on the smallest levels, subatomic levels. There is a classical world of classical physics. That's what you and I live in. That's where time flows in a straightforward direction. And there are causes and there are effects. And if you drop something, it will fall. And, you know, all the things that we know. And it takes us a while from the time we're born to figure out those rules. But once we figure them out, they make up the reality that we live in. And they don't change. They're very predictable, right? If you take a fragile vase and you drop it onto concrete, it's going to shatter and break, all right? Those are the basic rules that we operate under. Okay. And yesterday came before today. And the things I do today will affect the outcome tomorrow. Okay, all of that. That's all considered or called classical physics. Now, quantum physics operates on a whole other, whole other system, it seems. And it has very unexpected and very puzzling realities within it that don't match in any way our classical notion of how the world works. And the best known example of this is what is called the observer effect. The observer effect, in essence, let me see if I can find you a nice description. I highlighted this one that I'm going to share with you. All right. I'm on a website called postquantum.com, but you don't really need that website. You can go to any website to find this. And this does a really good job explaining this. I'm just going to read this. This person writes, as a consultant and educator, I often face wide-eyed questions about the strangest concepts in quantum mechanics. Today, my lecture deteriorated into a heated but fun philosophical argument about what wave function collapse means for our reality. Techies in the group scratched their heads with the concept being so far outside their usual experience, while PhD physicists, completely comfortable with our reality being something vague, argued which particular interpretation is the more correct one. Now, what are they arguing about? Listen to this. Wave function collapse is the idea that a quantum system described by a wave function embodying several positive states at once suddenly reduces to a single state when observed. All right, this is also called the observer effect. Now, let me see if I can, I'm going to read on because this is really interesting. Before you measure it, a quantum object can be in a superposition of many possibilities. When you measure it, you get one definite or definitive, one single outcome. This is a seemingly abrupt leap from many possibilities into one, and it's actually what we call wave function collapse. It's a core concept in quantum mechanics, and it lies at the heart of how quantum computers operate and how reality, at the smallest scales, transition to the concrete world we experience. All right. If that sounds abstract, let's use a down-to-earth example. And here they talk about Schrodinger's cat. If you ever heard of Schrodinger's cat, the cat is in a box, and there's a 50-50 chance that the cat will be killed or killed by a device in the box. 50-50, you don't know which. Quantum theory says that until we open the box, the cat is neither alive nor dead, but is simultaneously both. Now, this is weirdness. Stay with me on this quantum weirdness because it's weird. The cat is simultaneously both alive and dead. And it is not until we open the box and look at the cat and see a living cat or a dead cat that reality chooses one or the other outcome. Okay, this is so weird. All right, the wave function describes this duality of outcomes. The moment we lift the lid or make any form of observation, we always find a cat that is either alive or dead. We'll never find a living dead cloud of catness in there. We'll find one or the other. The multi-possibility wave function collapses into a single reality, and the cat's fate is decided at the moment we observe it. Right? There is a measuring problem here. If there is, and we found this through physics, and probably the best example of this, and I'll really, really simplify this. I know people are listening who are physicists, so just plug your ears or leave the room for a minute. Turn down the radio while I explain this, but it really does illustrate the concept. All right, so let's say you have an electron, and you have a gun in your hand that shoots a single electron, and you shoot it at some film, just a black square of film that's across the room, I don't know, 10 feet away, 5 feet away. And you pull the trigger on your gun and you shoot your electron at the film. And then you walk over and look at the film. What you're going to find on your black square is one single dot. You're going to find one little dot where the light went through. Right? Now, let's say you do the same thing. You have your gun. You're going to shoot your electron. But this time you close your eyes and you shoot. Right? Now, you close your eyes and you shoot. You walk over to the film. And what do you find? You find two dots. Not one, two. The weirdness here is that when someone is looking and watching, It will only go through one time, but if nobody's looking, it will go through in both states. Now, this concept of simultaneously being in two states at once until observed is at the heart of quantum computing, and it's how quantum computers actually work. Now, this, you can go on and on. There's lots of examples. You could have a camera in the room. In fact, no people. You just have an automatic gun. It shoots the thing, and the camera's there. If you, and let's say the film is behind, I don't know, the minute it shoots the film, you cover it with, you put it in an envelope automatically, right? And there's a camera that was watching it. If you destroy the camera and pull it out of the envelope, it'll have two dots. If you do not destroy the camera and you actually look at the camera and you pull it out of the envelope, it'll have one dot. So somehow reality knows in advance whether you're going to be observing it later. Is that crazy or what? Yeah. So this is mind-bogglingly crazy, and the implications are wild, because the implications of this are that anything that we don't yet know the outcome of is in that floaty space, that in-between both state. Okay. Now, we know this is true. This is actually what quantum computing is based on. They have things called qubits, which are subatomic particles that are in the simultaneous both states at once. And in fact, one of the reasons why quantum computing is so delicate is because you have to make absolutely sure you don't measure it in any way, because the second you measure it, it will collapse and it won't be in both states. It'll be in a single state. And this is the challenge of quantum computing, is to keep things in that both state status rather than have it collapse into a single status. Now, on the subatomic level, that's how it works. Does it work that way on the larger level? Well, many physicists say that indeed it does. And I would say that it certainly seems to. Now, let me tell you how this ties in with prayer. When my doctor said, something's wrong with your breast there, and I felt a poke, and I'm like, I think something's wrong with my breast, but I don't know yet. In between the moment that that was said and the moment when the technician did the sonogram on my breast, it was undetermined. Now, here's the weird part. We would think in our classical reality, it either was or wasn't. All we got to do is find out. But in a quantum understanding of reality, it was both at the same time. And the measurement would determine or force it to take a single state, just as this is how quantum mechanics works. And I'll send you a link to this. You can read it. It's a good description. So if it is true that reality, things that we don't know the outcome of, like tests, right? Things we don't know the outcome of, the minute we look, get locked into a particular state, then wouldn't it make sense that prayer would have a huge outcome on which state it's going to lock into? I believe it does. And I have had the experience of things like this, where I prayed very hard, and I prayed, Lord, this is going to be one of two outcomes. I pray that you let it be the outcome that I need it to be, that this is not a malignant tumor. And the Lord listens to those prayers. They actually influence reality. You know that plaque I was talking about that Lori gave me that said prayer changes things? It's not just some kind of conceptual wave your hands kind of thing. It's actually changing reality. It actually changes reality in the same way that the observer effect actually changes reality. When you observe something, you lock it into whichever state it's going to be. All right, the implications of this are enormous. They go on and on. There are lots of philosophical discussions about what this means. There are lots of quantum physicists working to take advantage of this property to do incredibly powerful things. This is what we were talking about in yesterday's show, that we're going to come to the point of Q-Day, where we actually have enough of these quantum particles functioning together to create an incredible, mind-bogglingly powerful computer that functions using these things and their unknown state, because that's what gives quantum computing its power. So it is wild stuff, and I'm here to tell you that prayer works. So if you've got an outcome and you don't know what it's going to be, pray. Pray. I had a friend who recently had a health scare, and here I am a couple thousand miles away, and I prayed very hard, and I prayed using my understanding of quantum things and my understanding of God, and I prayed, and I said, we don't yet know the outcome of this, but I pray, God, that it be the outcome that, well, there's life and not death. And he answered. By the way, it's not bounded by time or space. Stay tuned.
I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
You wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to AmericasFreedomNetwork.com. Then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends, but I have called you friends. I have called you friend.
That's what our Lord said to us. He is not the Lord and we are his servants, although we are. We're actually his slaves because we volunteer to be, but not because he makes us that, not because he wants us to be his slaves. It's because I have given my all, my everything to serve him. And that is voluntary. It's voluntary. I don't know, dropping to my knees and saying, here I am, whatever you want, here I am, here I am. So, but he doesn't call us servants, he doesn't call us slaves. The devil does. The devil loves to keep people in addiction and bondage and in chains. He very much wants us to be slaves. God wants us to be free. And so he doesn't call us servants, he calls us friends. And it is a voluntary, My service to the Lord, efforts for him, my work for him is voluntary, entirely, 100%. There's complete free will. I don't have to do it. I choose to do it. Why? Because I love him. Because he's goodness. Personified. I mean, not personified. He is goodness. I don't need to personify. He just is goodness. That's what God is. And that's what I want to serve. I want always the arrows that I put on my bow to be aiming at goodness. And I know exactly where that goodness is, whether I can always hit it or not. Well, yeah, sometimes I don't hit it very well, but I'm trying. I'm really trying. All right, let me get back to this quantum discussion. It's incredible. It's amazing. So here's the deal. There is a reality that is called a fuzzy superposition that exists whenever nobody is observing. What? What? See, this is why at the beginning of this article this guy wrote, he said, yeah, I'm a professor, and people were really freaking out and arguing about it. Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense, because it is operating in a whole other way than our classical reality. Completely different. And yet, we've proven it over and over. In fact, entire computers and, billions, hundreds of millions, billions, not trillions, but lots of money is being spent to harness this capability and create incredibly powerful computers and do a lot of interesting and sometimes kind of worrisome things. But this is a reality. We do not... Let me see if I can distill this down to its philosophical essence. Reality doesn't exist until an observer observes it. Yeah. So this is, and it's true for each individual person. It's not as though you don't exist because I'm not seeing you. You exist. It's not as though I don't exist because you don't see me. You exist. I exist. But somehow, the way this universe works, the way this reality, this thing we all walk around in 3D space and live through a lifetime of, somehow it is operating in this kind of like make it up as you go sort of way. Now, this is where we get the concept, the philosophical concept of multiple realities, that some physicists, some quantum physicists believe that all of the possible states that it could collapse into, it has collapsed into. Now, in the case of an electron, which we're shooting at a black screen, there's only two states, right? The state on the left, the state on the right. And I suppose if you're shooting an electron and it really matters, you can pray and pray for it to please be the spot on the left or the spot on the right. And if you don't look, it's both. But the minute you look, it's going to be one or the other. And your prayer probably does affect that outcome, because certainly your observation affects it. So why wouldn't your prayer, why wouldn't your heart, why wouldn't your intention affect it as well? But the implications of this are enormous, because what it means is that every moment that there is something, like right now I'm sitting in a room, I'm sitting at a computer, I'm all alone. And I'm looking out the window, because I do have a window, and I see some houses, but I don't see any people. That is my current reality. And what I don't see is the things that are not visible to me, the things I can't observe. Quantum physics would say that those things are out there, but that until I observe them, they haven't taken a definitive state. They haven't settled on what they're going to be. This is wild. Now, I remember telling you guys a couple months ago, I think I told you, about my sister who had a very suspicious tumor-looking lump in her lungs. And it was big, and it was honking, and it was scary, and it was bad. And they were going to, she was in the hospital, and they were going to send her in the next day to test it and figure out what it was. And I prayed my guts out that when they actually did the test, that it would be okay, that it would be the good outcome, not the bad outcome, that the spot would go to the left, not the right. And guess what happened? Sure enough, the next day I talked to her, said, how'd your test go? She goes, it's the weirdest thing. There's nothing there. Like, it turned out to be, I don't know, a shadow or I don't even know what it was. I don't remember now, because it just went poof. It was gone. Didn't happen. So prayer changes things, guys. Pray. Pray, because there is more to this world than we know. There is a lot more going on. God's ways are not our ways. We do not understand these things. I don't think we're even intended to fully understand them, or God probably would have put more clues in place. We're only beginning to find this out, because we're getting so technologically advanced that we can look on this subatomic particle level, which no one has ever been able to look at in the past. The Bible says that in the end times, knowledge will be greatly increased, and people will run to and fro, travel around a lot. Knowledge is being greatly increased. This is knowledge that our ancestors certainly didn't have. Our grandparents didn't have. My parents didn't have. We barely have. This is new. This is new knowledge. But it's always worked this way. The world has always operated in this way. It's just now we're figuring it out. So when you hear about people saying there's parallel universes, well, according to some quantum physicists who try to make sense of this, they say that there is a reality in which the other outcome happened, and Catherine Albrecht has a cancerous tumor in her breast. And in that other reality, pretty much anything that's observed splits and splits and splits. And so you wind up not with billions of realities or trillions, but you wind up with an infinite number of realities all happening at the same time, cascading and splitting here and there and yonder. And according to that view, then I suppose prayer would say, well, if it splits into those 27 realities, I want my consciousness to be in the good one, please. Let me split. Let the me who's paying attention and is me actually kind of follow the good timeline out of all of those splits that happen. Is this weird or is this weird? All right. There's a really good description, post-quantum. I posted it in my chat room at Catherine-Albrecht.com, and the live chat room there, you can read about it on the post-quantum website. I think they did a really good job explaining it here, this professor. So he says, imagine a coin that is magically both heads and tails at once while it's spinning unseen. This is a great way to think of it. The coin state is like a quantum superposition of two outcomes. When you slap it on the table and peek, you always see a definite face, heads, or tails. It's as if the act of looking made nature, quote, choose. In quantum terms, you peeking or measuring collapsed the coin's wave function from a mix of heads and tails to a single state, one or the other. Unlike a normal coin, which was actually one or the other all along, we just didn't know which, a quantum superposition genuinely encompasses both until observed. Now, this is so weird. All right, wave function collapse. Now that's where it goes from this fuzzy being both at the same time, weirdly, into being one or the other. It is weird because it implies that reality doesn't decide on an outcome until an observation is made. This isn't just ignorance, it's fundamental indeterminacy. As physicist John von Neumann formalized back in 1932, quantum theory only gives probabilities for each possible outcome, and the wave functions collapse on measurement picks one outcome at random. Okay, so again, you're shooting your electron at that black piece of film, and it's either going to go to the left or to the right or both, right? If you don't look, it's going to go through both because that's what it's going to do because nobody's looking. So it's going to be both at the same time, and it's actually going to leave its mark. But if you look, it's going to pick either the left or the right. Now, according to John von Neumann, it's completely random and arbitrary which one it's going to be. It's going to be the left, it's going to be the right, who knows? But according to me and many people who believe in prayer is going to heavily weight the outcome to where it is not entirely random whether it hits the left or the right. It's not going to be entirely random whether the result of Catherine Albrecht's breast sonogram is going to show cancer or is going to show all clear. But the prayer impacts which outcome you get. Now, the crazy part of this is for the last week, I have been walking around this earth as a living person with both cancer and non-cancer in my breast. I've been walking around with a fuzzy state of cancer, non-cancer going on right here. Now, if I'd been able to measure at any point sooner, let's say I had some magical little thing I could just put against my breast and measure, then it would instantly collapse into one or the other. But until I did that measurement, it was fuzzily both. Now, this is true for everything. If you have a loved one who's in the hospital, maybe, I don't know, maybe a baby who might not survive or might survive, and you don't know which, well, until you know, you don't know. And so prayer, my friends, prayer. Prayer is actually, I believe, been now proven by physics, quantum physics, like the really complicated stuff. So, yeah, pray. It's meaningful. It changes things. It really does. Because the world is a really weird place. And we need to be praying for the right outcome. All right. I love you guys. Thanks so much for listening. I'm glad I'm going to be around for a while. All right. See you tomorrow. God bless you. Bye-bye.